The chair lays before the House a communication from the Speaker.
The Speaker's Rooms, Washington, D.C., January 24, 2007. I hereby appoint the Honorable Emmanuel Cleaver to act as Speaker pro tempore on this day. Signed, Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House of Representatives.
The prayer will be ordered by the chaplain, Father Dan Coughlin.
Lord of history, and ever present to those in need, we come to you in prayer to dedicate the work of this government to the common good of your people and to give glory to your holy name. May the words of your prophet Isaiah ring true of this place and this time in history. A strong city have we. The Lord has set up walls and ramparts to protect us. Open wide the gates to your presence, and let in a nation that is just, one that keeps faith. A nation of firm purpose you will keep in peace. There will be peace, for it places its trust in you. Because the Lord is an eternal rock, trust in the Lord, now and forever. Amen.
Thank you, Father. The chair has examined the journal of the last day's proceedings and announces to the House his approval thereof. Pursuant to Clause 1 of Rule 1, the journal stands approved. We will now have the Pledge of Allegiance by the gentlewoman from the Virgin Islands, Ms. Christensen.
Thank you. My colleagues, please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The chair will receive a message.
Mr. Speaker, a message from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker.
Madam Secretary.
I have been directed by the Senate to inform the House that the Senate has agreed to, without amendment, H. Congress 41, providing for a conditional adjournment of the House of Representatives.
The chair will entertain 5 one-minute speeches on both sides. What purpose does the gentlewoman from the Virgin Islands approach?
To adjust the House for 1 minute and revise and extend my remarks.
Without objection.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It is with a heavy heart that I rise this morning to grieve along with the residents of my entire district over the loss of two members of the Virgin Islands National Guard who were lost when the Black Hawk helicopter they were on was shot down in Iraq on Saturday. We thank God for them, their professionalism, dedication, and their service. Lieutenant Colonel David Canigator III and Sergeant Floyd James Lake. And we thank God for the over 400 soldiers, men and women, who have served in this war, including five others who also made the ultimate sacrifice. We pray for their families and for the day that we will bring all of our soldiers home. And so, Mr. Speaker, especially now I'm forced to ask on their behalf and on behalf of all of the people of the Virgin Islands who have sent our loved ones to every war from the Revolutionary to this in higher per capita numbers than most states, why it is that some would seek to deny us an even limited vote in the Committee of the Whole. These brave men died in support of extending democracy in the Middle East. Every member of this body should vote to extend democracy here at home, to support your colleagues and fellow Americans who happen to live in the district and territories, and we should have a unanimous vote on H.Res. 78. Thank you, and I yield back the balance of my time.
Gentleman from Texas.
Request permission to address the House for 1 minute.
No objection.
Mr. Speaker, Justin Thurber was a deviant that liked to secretly sneak, slither around, and follow women who rebuffed him. He tracked them like one would track an animal for prey. He did not like being told no. For the young women in a small Kansas college town of Arkansas City, Thurber's predatory actions were well known. He was the town stalker, the town weirdo. Jody Sanderholm was one of his victims. When Jody disappeared, her college friends knew who was responsible. On January 5th of this year, Thurber had enough of being ignored by Jody. He kidnapped her. He drove her to a remote, lonely, desolate area in the county. He raped her. He strangled her to death. He covered up his dastardly murder by hiding her body in the remoteness of the woods and he dumped her car in the lake. Jody died, and the last person on earth she saw was not her family, but the town stalker. Mr. Speaker, nearly 1.4 million people are stalked each year. Most are women. Intimidating a woman by following her around and showing up outside her home, work, and school is not romantic. It's a perverted crime, and hopefully the good people of Kansas will put this stalker in the ground. And that's just the way it is.
The gentleman from Georgia.
I approach, sir, to address the House for 1 minute with unanimous consent.
No objection.
Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, last night President Bush unveiled a health insurance proposal that is nothing more than a tax hike on middle-class Americans. The President's plan would provide tax breaks to Americans who purchase their own medical insurance and would pay for it by taxing so-called high-priced health insurance plans. And just who is the President referring to when he talks about those supposed high-priced insurance plans? Paul Krugman of the New York Times writes, quote, "We're not talking about the wealthy. We're talking about ordinary workers who have managed to negotiate better than average health plans," unquote. That's right. In the same year that the President is once again submitting a budget making his tax cuts permanent, tax cuts that go overwhelmingly to the richest of Americans, he is proposing to shift more of the cost of health onto working Americans. Mr. Speaker, this is not the way to solve our nation's health care problems. This Democratic House will work and look at creative ways to reduce the number of uninsured without taxing the health care benefits of middle-class workers. I yield back.
Gentleman from Oregon.
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent to address the House for 1 minute, revise and extend my remarks.
No objection.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The failure of Congress to reauthorize and fund the Secure Rural Schools and Community Self-Determination Act amounts to a breach of faith to more than 600 forested counties across America. For rural Lake County, Oregon, no stranger to economic challenges, this means 93% of the county's road budget has vanished. With 709 miles of road to maintain during rugged winters, basic maintenance and sure passage for school buses and emergency vehicles will be crippled. County Commissioner Brad Winter says without these dollars, the destruction of our roads through lack of repair will be inevitable and we will be back to dirt. Failure to reauthorize delivers a blow to our schools, too. School District Superintendent Judy Graham puts it this way. Our past challenges have made it difficult to offer even limited services. Losing county payments funding will devastate the environment our children rely upon to learn and grow. My colleagues, Congress must pass H.R. 17 and keep the federal government's promise to timbered communities. Time is running out.
The gentleman from South Carolina.
Extend my remarks.
No objection.
Mr. Speaker, today I will reintroduce the National Right to Work Act. This bill seeks to end compulsory union dues and return to American workers their unalienable freedom of choice. As ranking member of the Subcommittee on Workforce Protections, this is an issue with which I am actively involved. No American should be forced to pay union dues to get or keep a job. Ironically, even proponents of compulsory unionism acknowledge that coercion is the central pillar of our current federal labor law. By simply repealing certain provisions of the National Labor Relations Act and the Railway Labor Act, we can abolish union dues. I am pleased to introduce this bill with 51 of our colleagues, and I urge you to join us in increasing the freedom and prosperity of American workers. In conclusion, God bless our troops, and we will never forget September the 11th.
The gentleman from Pennsylvania.
Address the House for 1 minute.
No objections.
Mr. Speaker, the Democrats are stretching the Constitution beyond its limits and inviting further partisan abuse. Mr. Speaker, those aren't my words. That is a direct quote from a 1993 USA Today editorial. That was the last time House Democrats moved to give congressional voting privileges to the delegates of the U.S. territories, and today they will attempt the same thing. While the other side will cloak this move in the language of inclusion and fairness, make no mistake, this is a power grab. Democrats are simply looking for more votes on this floor, and they will say this is fair and just, but keep in mind that four of the five U.S. territories are exempt from U.S. federal income tax laws. What is fair or just about letting untaxed delegates vote on tax policy for the rest of Americans who do pay taxes. The American public should not be fooled by my friends on the other side of the aisle today. This is nothing more than a thinly veiled power grab, and it comes at the expense of the U.S. Constitution. I yield back.
The gentlewoman from West Virginia, Ms. Capito. No objections.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise today to extend congratulations to Jeremiah Kent Navenshue, who recently accomplished the highest rank in Boy Scouting, becoming an Eagle Scout on October the 4th, 2006. Jeremiah achieved his new title at the end of a seven-year career in Boy Scout Troop 88, which is chartered by the Elkins United Methodist Church. He served as an assistant patrol leader and bugler and was elected patrol leader. Jeremiah performed many community service projects, including Adopt a Highway and other community beautification projects. Boy Scout Troop 88 also organized a Scouting for Food project at Elkins, which is a national Boy Scout activity where members of the troop collect food donations from their community to allocate to food banks. For his Eagle Scout project, he cleared and finished an area in Riverbend Park for the public use to use. Jeremiah is a student at Elkins High School, where he is president of Future Farmer of America chapter. He is also a member of the National Honor Society and is on the wrestling team and participates in the band. I am proud to recognize Jeremiah on his accomplishments. Randolph County and the state of West Virginia are fortunate to have him as a leader and a volunteer in his community, and I yield back.
Thank you. Pursuant to sections 550 and 5581 of the revised statutes 20 U.S.C. 42-43 and the order of the House of January 4, 2007, the chair announces the speaker's appointment of the following member of the House to the Board of Regents of the Smithsonian Institution.
Mr. Sam Johnson of Texas.
Does the gentleman from Massachusetts rise?
Mr. Speaker, by direction of the Committee on Rules, I call up House Rule, House Resolution 86 and ask for its immediate consideration.
The clerk will report the resolution.
House Calendar Number 3, House Resolution 86, resolved that upon the adoption of this resolution, it shall be in order without intervention of any point of order to consider in the House the resolution, House Resolution 78, amending the rules of the House of Representatives to permit delegates and the resident commissioner to the Congress to cast votes in the committee of the whole House on the State of the Union. The resolution shall be considered as read. The previous question shall be considered as ordered on the resolution and on any amendment thereto to final adoption without intervening motion or demand for division of the question, except one. 1 hour of debate on the resolution, equally divided and controlled by the chairman and ranking minority member of the Committee on Rules. 2, the amendment printed in the report of the Committee on Rules accompanying this resolution, if offered by Representative Kirk of Illinois or his designee, which shall be in order without intervention of any point of order or demand for division of the question, shall be considered as read and shall be separately debatable for 20 minutes, equally divided and controlled by the proponent and an opponent. And 3, one motion to recommit, which may not contain instructions. Section 2. During consideration of H.Res. 78, pursuant to this resolution, notwithstanding the operation of the previous question, the chair may postpone further consideration of the bill to a time designated by the speaker.
The gentleman from Massachusetts has 1 hour, and you are recognized for thus.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, for the purposes of debate only, I yield my friend from California, the distinguished ranking member of the Committee on Rules, Mr. Dreyer, 30 minutes, pending which I yield myself such time as they may consume. And during consideration of this resolution, all time yielded is for purposes of debate only. Mr. Speaker, the rule before us provides 1 hour of general debate in the House, equally divided and controlled by the chairman and ranking minority member of the Committee on Rules. The rule waives all points of order against consideration of the resolution and provides that the resolution shall be considered as read. The rule makes in order the amendment printed in the rules report accompanying this resolution, if offered by Representative Kirk of Illinois or his designee. The amendment shall be considered as read, shall be debatable for 20 minutes, equally divided and controlled by the proponent and an opponent, and shall not be subject to a demand for a division of the question. The rule also waives all points of order against consideration of the amendment printed in the report and contains one motion to recommit, which may not contain instructions. Finally, the rule provides that notwithstanding the operation of the previous question, the chair may postpone further consideration of the bill to a time designated by the Speaker. Mr. Speaker, let me clearly state that there is no obligation for any member to offer the amendment. The rule simply allows Mr. Kirk or his designee the option of offering this amendment if they choose to do so. Also, Mr. Speaker, the Republicans were given the option to offer a substitute, and they declined. This resolution will amend the House rules and allow the 5 delegates who are elected to the House of Representatives to vote in the Committee on the Whole. The Committee of the Whole is comprised of all members of the House of Representatives and is a procedural forum in which the House considers debates and votes on amendments to most of the legislation reported out of committee. After consideration of amendments in the Committee of the Whole, legislation is reported to the floor of the House for final consideration. As we all know, Mr. Speaker, delegates and resident commissioner have the same powers, rights, and responsibilities as full members of the House, with some exceptions. They cannot vote on the floor in the House or in the Committee of the Whole. They cannot offer a motion to reconsider, and they are not counted for quorum purposes. Mr. Speaker, this resolution provides certain protections that have been ruled constitutional by federal courts. Specifically, no delegate or resident commissioner can provide the deciding margin of any amendment considered in the Committee of the Whole. In other words, if the vote in the Committee of the Whole is decided by 5 or fewer votes, it must be reconsidered immediately by the House of Representatives. Let me state this clearly for all my colleagues. No delegate or resident commissioner will provide the margin of victory or defeat of any amendment. It's that clear. Delegates and the resident commissioner will not be able to vote on final passage, nor will they be able to vote on procedural motions. Mr. Speaker, the delegates and resident commissioner represent people who serve in our armed forces. 30,000 residents of Guam are military personnel. Over 2,400 soldiers from the territories in the District of Columbia are fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan today, wars that this chamber voted in favor of. America's Samoa has the highest per capita casualty rate of any state or territory for the war in Iraq. We believe that the people who fight and die wearing the uniform of the United States deserve to have their voices heard in the People's House. Beyond that, Mr. Speaker, residents of all territories in the District of Columbia pay Social Security taxes, Medicare taxes under FICA. The people living in the territories in the District of Columbia deserve to have a voice in Congress, and their elected representatives, the delegates and the resident commissioner, deserve to have a vote in the committee of the whole. Mr. Speaker, while these voting privileges are in large part symbolic, and I, for one, believe that the District of Columbia, where people actually pay federal taxes in addition to all the other contributions that they make to this country, deserve to have full voting rights in this Congress. But this is the least I think we can do to restore some modicum of representation to these millions of Americans. And I strongly urge my colleagues to support this rule and vote for the resolution, and I reserve the balance of my time.
The gentleman from California is recognized.
Speaker, I yield myself such time as I may consume, and I rise to express my appreciation to my very good friend from Massachusetts for yielding me the time and for his effort in getting us to the point where we are. But, Mr. Speaker, I do rise in very, very strong opposition to not only this rule but the underlying legislation, H.Res. 78 as well, which will, as we, as the gentleman has said very clearly, will authorize the delegates and the resident commissioner to vote on legislation that is on the House floor. I must confess that I'm broadly disappointed in how we've arrived here. I'm disappointed that we are here again debating a proposal which is, I truly believe, at its heart, unconstitutional. While I have the utmost respect for my colleagues from the territories and from the District of Columbia, if they want to vote in this body, Mr. Speaker, they should begin the statehood process, plain and simple. They should pursue that with great vigor and enthusiasm, and those who are the strongest supporters of it now have a majority in this House, which I believe should allow them to proceed with that effort if they so choose. Now, Mr. Speaker, reasonable people can disagree as to the merits of this proposal. We're going to hear an awful lot this morning. However, I'm also disappointed that we find ourselves in a situation where my colleagues at the Rules Committee have once again rolled back the transparency that I was very proud to work so diligently in behalf of when I had the privilege to serve as chairman of the committee. First, it was the ability to enforce the rules regarding putting record votes in committee reports, thrown out the window. Next, rather than following the example that I was privileged to set in the 109th Congress of conducting actual hearings and markups of rule changes, we find ourselves, Mr. Speaker, without the benefit of hearings, with outside witnesses, without a committee report explaining the committee's thinking, without any opportunity for the minority to have its views published as part of the legislative history. And I understand full well, Mr. Speaker, this for the average American is seen as inside baseball stuff, but deliberative democracy is something that is very near and dear to the founding of this country, the very basis on which our nation was founded. And last night we had a great speech from the President of the United States that was delivered here in which he talked about our goal of working together. But more than that, Mr. Speaker, I'm disappointed about how my colleagues are approaching the most basic tasks of the Rules Committee. The Rules Committee is the all-important committee of the House, the traffic cop through which every major piece of legislation must go before it's considered here on the House floor. With the exception of privilege resolutions and items that we consider under suspension of the rules, what we really do here in the appropriations process, we have tremendous responsibility. I argue that the Rules Committee is the single most important committee that exists in this institution because of the very, very unique role that we play. I am so disappointed in how I have seen the basic handling of this committee. Any of you who have had the honor to serve as chairs of committees know the challenges of crafting an agenda, of building support, and moving that support forward. But as chairman, we have a basic responsibility to maintain those very basic workings of the committee, to ensure that members have the documents that they need to discuss and debate matters that are before them. Now, I don't want to belabor this, Mr. Speaker, but going through the particulars of yesterday's meeting, but it, I have to say, is very, very disappointing. Let me just say that my colleagues failed. The majority failed at the most basic responsibilities, which disappoints me even more. The last time this body considered, Mr. Speaker, the issue of delegate voting, it was as part of an opening day rules package. The rule was changed despite bipartisan opposition. That rule change led in the then minority leader, our friend Mr. Michael, to file a lawsuit against the House to stop delegates from voting on the House floor. While the courts upheld the rule, they did so only because of the parliamentary sleight of hand, which makes the right conferred on our colleagues illusory at the very best. And Mr. Speaker, 14 years later, this body is made up of 299 members who were not here, never had a chance to vote on this issue before. And as I said, even back then, there's never been a hearing, never been a process for us to hear from the scholars who clearly would spend a great deal of time and energy considering whether or not we should proceed with allowing the people who are not representatives from states to have a chance to vote on the House floor. So, Mr. Speaker, this is a very, very bad rule. It's a bad, bad, bad process. And what we witnessed last night in the Rules Committee was one of, if not the greatest disservice to this institution that I've ever seen. It clearly is up there as one of the most pathetic and sad and disappointing things that I've ever seen. As I said before, if my colleagues want the delegates and the resident commissioner to enjoy the benefits conferred upon representatives of the several states, they should encourage efforts to achieve statehood. There is nothing, Mr. Speaker, to be served by moving this unconstitutional rule any further in the process. And to the point that was offered by my friend from Massachusetts on this notion of a substitute provided, I was taught very early on when I came to this institution more than a quarter of a century ago that you don't amend a bad bill. There is nothing that can be done in the amendment process that could make this constitutional. And this notion that we've gone the entire route, the United States Supreme Court has not considered this, Mr. Speaker, and I believe that what we're going to do here today, if it in fact succeeds, what we're going to do is we're going to embark on another legal struggle, just as we did 14 years ago. And so I urge my colleagues to vote against this rule, and if the rule does prevail, I urge them to vote against the underlying resolution, Mr. Speaker. And with that, I reserve the balance of my time.
The gentleman from Massachusetts is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And again, I would remind my colleagues that the minority was given the opportunity for a substitute, and they declined. I would remind my colleagues in the House that the minority, the one member of the minority who came before the Rules Committee and offered an amendment, that amendment has been made in order if he so chooses to offer it. So I guess maybe because this is not a closed rule, it doesn't fit into the Republican talking points today, they're a little bit upset. But the bottom line is that we, on the majority side, have done our best to try to accommodate the minority. Now,
Mr. Speaker, will the gentleman yield? Not at this time.
I want to finish my statement.
Okay, I completely understand. But
and I'm glad you respect the courtesies and the decorum of the House. Mr. Speaker, let me also say that it is a little bit difficult for any of us on this side of the aisle to stand here and be lectured about process by the distinguished former chairman of the Rules Committee to be lectured about transparency and about how the committee should be run. I recall being in the committee when the USA Patriot Act was brought before the Rules Committee, went through a process of regular order, bipartisan process, and then was rewritten in the Rules Committee without anybody knowing what was going on, and then brought to the floor under a very closed process. I remember a special interest provision that magically appeared on a conference report after the report was signed and closed. That is not the process that this new Democratic majority wants to emulate. I'll yield to the gentleman for 30 seconds.
I thank my friend for yielding, and as the gentleman goes through this litany of arguments, I would ask my friend if we ever deny the wishes of a member who asked that an amendment be withdrawn and gone ahead and made that amendment in order.
I reclaim my time. Mr. Speaker, I could be here all day, all week, all month, and perhaps all year, documenting and listing occasion after occasion after occasion where the former majority, I think, broke the rules of this House and did a great disservice to the rules of this House. We have done our best to accommodate the minority on this rule. They had the opportunity to offer a substitute. They declined. An amendment that was brought before the Rules Committee has been made in order. If they don't want to offer it, they don't have to offer it. In fact, if they don't want it in the rule, we have made the offer that if they want to offer an amendment to strike the Kirk provision, they can offer an amendment on this floor.
Mr. Speaker, will
and we'll
yield?
Be happy to accept it. So I think, Mr. Speaker, that this kind of talk of a bad process, and I should also point out, just for the record, that the Committee on Rules met in the afternoon, Mr. Dreyer, not in the evening. Things have changed. We meet in the light of day, not in the middle of the night anymore. At this point, Mr. Speaker, it is my privilege to yield 3 minutes to the gentlewoman from the Virgin Islands, Ms. Christensen.
The gentlewoman.
I thank the gentleman for yielding. Mr. Speaker, I rise in support of what is a very fair rule, H. Res. 86, to provide for the consideration of H. Res. 78 to amend the rules of the House of Representatives to permit delegates and the resident commissioner to cast votes in committee of the whole. But I see no reason for any amendment to this very straightforward provision that is simply the right thing to do. And it's a rule that we have asked for in every Congress since I have been here, since the 105th, when the Republicans were in the majority, but have never had a chance to have become a part of the rules. I want to commend and thank my friend and colleague, our Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, as well as the original co-sponsors of the resolution, Majority Whip Clyburn, Caucus Chair Emanuel, Vice Chair Larson, Representative Becerra, and Rules Committee Chairwoman Slaughter. My fellow delegates and I greatly appreciate their steadfast support for inclusion and full participation of all Americans in our National Assembly. A few minutes ago, I took to the floor to express my condolences that of my constituents and to recognize the service to the family of two members of the Virgin Islands National Guard who were killed along the tent with 10 other soldiers in the crash of a Black Hawk helicopter northeast of Baghdad on Saturday. I mention this because you'll hear a litany of objections from our colleagues on the other side of the aisle to the limited extension of democracy for me and the other delegates because of constitutional concerns. This attempt to prevent us from the practice of democracy in this limited way is shameful because my Republican colleagues know well that the proposal the House will be voting on today is constitutional and that the federal courts have held that it is. Why then are they insisting that my fellow delegates and I not be given the opportunity to participate more fully in the deliberations on legislation on the floor on behalf of our constituents, which is in keeping with our country's spirit of inclusion and democratic ideals? When my Republican colleagues bring up the question of payment of taxes, they know well that the residents of the territories pay federal taxes. We pay full Social Security and Medicare payroll taxes like every other American. We also pay the same federal income taxes prescribed by the tax laws that are passed here, which I can't vote on. It's just that under the principle of no taxation without representation, which goes back to the founding of our country, Congress allows those taxes to remain in the territory to fulfill federal responsibilities there. Moreover, because we get to keep those federal taxes that we pay, we don't get the full benefit of all federal programs. In the Medicaid program, for example, we receive less than a quarter of the federal share of the program that we would receive if we were fully participating in the program. Mr. Speaker, as a resident of a U.S. territory, my constituents proudly fulfill the ultimate responsibility of citizenship, being called upon to fight and die for our country, but without having a say in choosing who the Commander-in-Chief will be or having a representative in Congress with the right to vote on legislation on the floor. I know this cannot be, we cannot completely correct this under the Constitution. Could I have 30 more seconds, please?
30 seconds, please.
Thank you. And I know we cannot completely correct this under our Constitution, but we can make this small step toward inclusion of all Americans in the democratic process. And so I urge a yes vote on the rule and a yes vote on H.Res. 78. Thank you. I yield back.
The gentleman from California is recognized.
Mr. Speaker, my distinguished colleague from Miami, Mr. Diaz-Balart, has just read the appellate court decision on this issue and has spent a great deal of time and effort, and I yield him 3 minutes.
The gentleman is recognized.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the gentleman. I rise, let me begin by expressing my profound respect for the delegates in this House, and most especially for their constituents. But above all, I rise, Mr. Speaker, with profound respect for the document that we all swear to uphold when we are elected, when we take possession of this awesome responsibility and honor granted to us by our constituents. I think there can be few parts of the United States Constitution that are clear when Article 1, Section 2 states that the House of Representatives shall be composed of members chosen every second year by the people of the several states. Now, when in 1970, as you know, Mr. Speaker, before there had been by law and precedent, delegates of territories had been given some privileges in this House, and then in 1970 there was a clarification of those privileges. The vote was given to delegates in standing committees. In 1970. And at that time, when the vote was given to delegates in standing committees, there was some concern that that may be unconstitutional. In fact, there was a colloquy on this floor where Congressman B.F. Sisk of California asked future Speaker, then Representative Tom Foley, about that issue. And I'd like to read what future Speaker Foley said. Now, it is very clear that a constitutional amendment would be required to give the resident commissioner, and he was speaking about all the delegates, a vote in the committee of the whole or the full House. The point is that the constitutional issue does not touch preliminary advisory votes, which is what standing committee votes are, but only the votes which are cast in the committee of the whole or the full House. Those votes, Mr. Foley said, can be cast only by members of Congress. Now, the appellate court, interestingly enough, and I really find it difficult to believe that it was not appealed to the Supreme Court, because the appellate court said, well, true, but we're not dealing with votes in this rule. We're dealing with a figment of our imagination related to votes because they don't count. If they do count in the outcome of an amendment, there's an automatic revote. So they're not really votes. So since they're not really votes, they're not really unconstitutional. I think that was not a serious, and I respectfully say this, ruling by the district court. But obviously this time, if it does pass, I would assume that it will go to the Supreme Court, where perhaps there will be a more serious ruling.
Time has expired. The gentleman from Massachusetts.
Mr. Speaker, at this time I'd like to yield 3 minutes to the distinguished gentleman from New York who was actually born in the territory of Puerto Rico, Mr. Serrano.
The chair recognizes the gentleman from New York. No objection.
I thank the gentleman, and you are right. And perhaps it is that example that I present to you that shows why the system is broken. Because my parents chose to move in 1950 to New York, I'm able to be a member of Congress with full voting rights. Had I stayed in Puerto Rico, I could only aspire to be a resident commissioner, which is fine enough, but without full voting rights. So, question, since when does residency overpower and overtake citizenship? The 4 million people who live in Puerto Rico, the citizens, American citizens who live in all the territories, have no way to represent themselves in Congress, have no way to vote for the President of the United States. At this very moment, dozens of Puerto Ricans are mourned as they have died in the war in Iraq. Yet their colleagues who will come back will not be able to express themselves in Congress or express themselves through a presidential vote in terms of how they feel about that war or about that service. And so the issue today is simply this. Do you believe that American citizens, that has to be repeated, American citizens who live in territories, not states, have certain rights? I believe they have full rights. If it was up to me, they would have full voting representation. All we're saying today is that these delegates, these representatives, will have a right to participate on the House floor. We don't even go far enough to say that if the vote makes a difference, it stays put. There's a revote. So what are we really giving them? An opportunity to participate in democracy. How can we be trying to spread democracy throughout the world when we're not willing to spread it right here at home? 4 million American citizens live in the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico. Those 4 million could have 6 or 7 members of Congress if they were a state. The gentleman rightfully so says, well, if they want to be a state, they should be a state. There's only one problem with that. The group holding the colony, the American government, has to initiate that progress, that system, to bring people into the union. You can't hold a colony for 108 years in the case of Puerto Rico and expect them to tell you at what time they want to be whatever they want to be, because for 108 years, you've divided them into 3 different movements: independence, commonwealth, statehood. If we are holding the territory of Puerto Rico, it is our responsibility to say we're ready to invite you to come in. Certainly.
I would simply say that the gentleman's party is in charge now, and the process of beginning that move is really in your court. And it's one that we will be very, very interesting to engage in and look at and consider. And I think that it will be an absolute
reclaiming my time.
Debate.
That's a great suggestion. I'm sorry you didn't do it for the last 12 to 14 years. You could have started the process.
We're looking forward to it now. We're discussing.
I yield back. Thank you.
Time has expired. Ready to go, Tom? The gentleman from California.
Mr. Speaker, at this time, I'm very happy to yield 2 minutes to a very hardworking member of Congress, our friend from Georgia, Dr. Price.
The gentleman from Georgia is recognized. Dr. Price. No objection.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the gentleman for yielding on this extremely important issue. And I, too, rise with great respect for the individuals who are delegates and our resident commissioner. And I also want to make it certain that I state up front that we certainly commend all the men and women who fight our battle in this war on terror, with the recognition and appreciation that those men and women serve in a voluntary capacity, and our hearts and prayers go out to them and their family. I do want to say, however, Mr. Speaker, that this process is a remarkable abuse of power. I oppose the rule. I oppose the underlying bill on the basis of both of process, on the basis of policy, which I believe to be flawed, and also because it is remarkably unconstitutional. I'm oftentimes reminded of the Lewis Carroll book, and sometimes I feel that way. Just because you say it so doesn't make it so. Individuals who promote what we're doing right now believe, in fact, that way they can just make up rules at a whim. Well, in fact, we are tied by the ultimate document of our nation, and that is the United States Constitution. And it makes it very clear in that Constitution, Article 1, Section 2, that the House of Representatives shall be composed of members chosen every second year by the people of the several states. It doesn't say territories. It doesn't say the delegates of the territories. It doesn't say resident commissioner. I might indeed support a move for statehood for any of those entities. However, this is an unconscionable action. This is a violation of the public trust, and it's a clear abuse of power. Under this strategy, under this Democrat plot, the majority party could seat anybody in the House. Who's next? Who would you like to seat next? Howard Dean? He has a significant constituency. Why not have Howard Dean have a seat in the United States House of Representatives and a vote in the Committee of the Whole? Mr. Speaker, the American people are disgusted with this level of arrogance and the abuse of power that this demonstrates. I urge my colleagues to defeat this rule and to defeat the underlying bill. We will ultimately see the final defeat of this in the Supreme Court of the United States.
Gentleman from Massachusetts.
Mr. Speaker, let me encourage the gentleman from Georgia to read the rule. All right? The Republicans were offered the right for a substitute. They could have had a substitute that null and voided this entire package.
No, I will not.
And they chose not to. There is an amendment made in order under the rule by the gentleman from Illinois or his designee, which I strongly disagree with, that would essentially gut this entire provision. It would allow no but one, with the possible exception of the gentlewoman who represents the District of Columbia, to be able to participate. So the opportunity is there. What the gentleman needs to do is read the rule. At this point, Mr. Speaker, I would yield 2.5 minutes to the gentlewoman from Guam, Ms. Bordaio.
The gentlewoman from Guam is recognized by the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I ask unanimous consent to extend and revise my remarks.
No objection.
Mr. Speaker, I rise in support of the rule under consideration, which, if adopted, will allow this House to openly and fairly debate an issue important to my constituents and to our fellow Americans who reside right here in the shadow of the Capitol Dome, the citizens of our nation's capital city, and our fellow Americans who reside in the U.S. territories. I urge a yes vote on this rule because it means we can move forward with this important debate. Our participation in the Committee of the Whole, a symbolic vote, in the manner proposed by the amendment to the rules, would be consistent with the very foundations of our representative democracy. This issue is about elected public office for which we, as members and delegates alike, take a solemn oath. Like all members, we too solemnly affirm to support and defend the Constitution of the United States and to well and faithfully discharge the duties inherent with that responsibility. Mr. Speaker, it is in keeping with this oath that I come to the floor today to appeal for support on the rule and the resolution on principle and on the merits of this issue. This is about representation, the very core of this institution. This is about a symbolic but meaningful gesture. It is about inclusion. It is about the principle that every American deserves to be represented with a vote in Congress. This is a step in the right direction. It is not without precedent, and it has survived review by the judicial branch. The history of service by delegates to Congress from the territories dates back almost to the founding of our country. The noted and well-respected historian Robert Remini, in his excellent History of the House, published just last year, notes that one of the most unique features of the House of Representatives under the Constitution is the fact that delegates from the territories can participate and have participated in all and most important debates. I urge a yes vote on this rule in the spirit of this tradition. Yes, I yield.
I appreciate the gentlelady for yielding.
The gentlelady's time has expired.
Mr. Speaker,
gentleman from California.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. This time I'm very happy to yield a minute to our hardworking friend from Pittsburgh, Mr. Murphy.
I thank the gentleman for yielding.
The gentleman from Pennsylvania is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We certainly appreciate and admire all citizens of the United States and all those from territories, and they participate in debate here. One of the things that help us understand what takes place here, I'd like to go back to what happens in Allegheny County, where I live, in the city of Pittsburgh. We have an Allegheny County Council, and they meet in the city of Pittsburgh regularly, and some members of that council are citizens of the city of Pittsburgh, but their jurisdiction is not the city of Pittsburgh. And what would happen if they decided that it would be their jurisdiction to vote on issues that affected that city, on matters of taxation and other issues that take place? I believe the courts would say that just because you are citizens of this area does not mean that your jurisdiction of your elected body extends to that city, and of course would strike it down. This is not an issue of whether or not we respect and admire our friends and fellow citizens from these territories. It is a matter of the rules of what our Constitution states, of what people can represent, and what should be allowed in this body. It concerns me that on the tote boards here that list the votes, it does not say whether or not someone is a full member or a delegate. And that, I believe, is going to be something that's also going to mislead the American public as to the vote totals here. But more than anything else, to be able to vote on issues that affect my constituents, whether it's taxation or other issues of representation, it is simply not in our Constitution to have that there, and I urge members to vote no on this.
The gentleman from Massachusetts
Mr.
is
Speaker,
recognized.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to yield 4 minutes to the gentleman for the District of Columbia, Ms. Eleanor Holmes Norton, the District of Columbia, a place where there's taxation, but not full representation.
The gentleman from the District, the gentlewoman from the District of Columbia is recognized.
I thank the gentleman for yielding and for reminding this House of the bottom line. The delegate vote resolution on the floor will confuse many, anger others, and needlessly divide the people's house about a right to vote settled by the federal courts 14 years ago. Mrs. Speaker, during the 103rd Congress, I just finished my freshman year. When the Democrats were in the majority, I submitted a legal memorandum and requested and obtained the right to vote in the Committee of the Whole for the residents of the District of Columbia. The House decided to include delegates because we normally have all been treated the same. Of course, we had no objection. The Democrats, however, sent the matter to outside attorneys and experts who confirmed that the delegate vote would be constitutional, and the House acted. The Republican minority then sued the House. However, the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia and the U.S. Court of Appeals both confirmed the constitutionality of the House's action in allowing delegate voting in the Committee of the Whole, just as Congress had long done in subject matter committees created by the House. The Republicans took control in the 104th Congress and withdrew the only vote the residents of the District of Columbia have ever had on the floor for more than 200 years. I say to my friends on the other side, there is nothing left to debate about. The courts have now spoken. You had your say in a debate when the Democrats did it the right way. They simply put it in the rules and allowed full debate. You debated then, you took it to the courts, you debated again, and you took it to the Court of Appeals, and you debated it again. If there was to be a debate, it should have been on January 4th. But for reasons I have not been able to find, it wasn't in the rules the way it was in the rules when I first got this vote. I want to be clear. This was a breakthrough for the District of Columbia when, after my first term, I got this vote. My residents, seeing the first thing tried of this House, not 328, where for 4 years we have tried to get the full vote, but the vote I got 14 years ago, regard this as a setback for the District of Columbia. This House and the Senate in 2006 reauthorized the Voting Rights Act of 1965. My friends, the D.C. vote is the Voting Rights Act of 2007, and we will be held accountable to enact that bill. This is not my fight. The civil rights movement has spent 4 years, 4 years, in actions all over America to get support for the full House vote for the District of Columbia. Most Americans expect that a vote for the district will be the vote they see come from the House first off, they're going to be completely confused. I ask my colleagues on the other side not to allow this needless debate to poison the atmosphere that Tom Davis and I have struggled to create for the last 4 years in a bipartisan bill for the
District of Columbia.
I only have four minutes. The right to vote was taken out of the rules by the Republicans. Can I have another 2 minutes?
Speaker, I yield the gentlewoman another 2 minutes.
The gentlewoman
now,
has
if
two
the Republicans,
minutes.
Thank you. If the Republicans took it out of the rules, it obviously was an obligation of the Democrats to put it back in. They had no alternative. Why not put it back in the rules? Why are we having to be drawn and quartered as delegates out of here? Why is there populations, there differences drawn out here? Why is this debate dividing this House and dividing the delegates? Why is there a debate that divides me from my brothers and sisters who are delegates? Why have you done this to us? And don't you take the bait. Please don't take the bait. Respect the delegates, not just me who pays federal income taxes, but the other delegates who fight and die in war disproportionately compared to the rest of us. What has my side done, giving the Republicans a non-issue? Worse, they have subjected us to controversy, and we don't want to be controversial. We want delegates to be fully respected. It's heartbreaking for me. This debate is entirely heartbreaking for me. As you know, this vote is not the full vote. That's what is heartbreaking. Look at the calendar. The calendar's empty because the committees are just organizing. Why isn't H.R. 328 the first bill out of the Democratic House? That is what I cannot explain to my constituents. They don't understand this debate. Somebody's got to come to this floor and tell me why I have to plead for the vote that the courts said I was entitled to 14 years ago. It's time to go where we left off, markup at Judiciary Committee, and let's get that vote out of here. For goodness sakes, you've got to give this vote to the delegates. Move on. The residents of the District of Columbia have been grateful for those Republicans who have supported our full House vote and for Democrats who have done so for so long. The delegate vote is unavoidable. Do it, get it done. But it is less than the full vote that the District of Columbia deserves and that you have supported. It does not meet the standard you have set for yourselves. To have me have to come to the floor to ask for a vote that I won 14 years ago. The standard you have to meet is the standard you set for yourself. Full voting rights for the District of Columbia.
The gentleman from California is recognized.
Mr. Speaker, the very thoughtful remarks of our friend from the District of Columbia underscore what a great challenge that we have here on both sides of the aisle. With that, I'd like to yield 1 minute to my very good friend from Hollidaysburg, Pennsylvania, Mr. Schuster.
The chair recognizes the gentleman from Pennsylvania.
I thank the gentleman, and I rise today with great respect for the delegates and the resident commissioner and all the people that they represent. But I strongly oppose both this rule and the underlying resolution. The resolution we are considering today is pure and simple a power grab. There is no way I can support a resolution that dilutes the rights of the hardworking people of Western and Central Pennsylvania. And there's no reason they should support representatives that have their rights diluted. The Democrat scheme tramples on the Constitution and the design of one man, one vote. Article 1, Section 2 of the Constitution clearly states, the House shall be comprised of members chosen by the people of the several states. It does not provide full voting privileges for delegates representing non-state territories. Plain and simple, this is representation without taxation. This proposal will allow the Democratic delegates to raise the taxes on the American people, but then they will not have to pay them. I strongly encourage all members of the Pennsylvania delegation to vote against this resolution and protect the rights of the hardworking people of Pennsylvania. And I yield back the balance of my time.
The gentleman from Massachusetts is recognized.
Mr. Speaker, at this time I'd like to yield 2 minutes to the gentleman from America Samoa, Mr. Feli Mo Vega.
The gentleman from Samoa is recognized.
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent to extend and revise my remarks.
No objection.
Mr. Speaker, I know that some of our colleagues on the other side of the aisle has seriously challenged the constitutionality of this proposed rule, as it was indicated yesterday by our good friend and colleague from the state of Louisiana, and also now reiterated by my good friend from California. Mr. Speaker, this proposed rule has already gone through the process where 13 of our Republican friends from the other side of the aisle 13 years ago filed a lawsuit in the district court, federal district court of the District of Columbia, to challenge the constitutionality of this proposed rule. And what happens? The judge ruled that it was constitutional. Our friends on the other side appealed the case to the Federal Circuit Court, the Court of Appeals of the District of Columbia, and they reaffirmed the decision of the lower court. So when you talk about the constitutionality of this issue, Mr. Speaker, I submit to my good friends from the other side of the aisle, constitutionality of this proposed rule has already been, it's moot. It's a moot issue. We've already discussed this in the court. Now, if my good friends from the other side of the aisle would like to appeal this case to the Supreme Court, then let's do it. But as far as I could read in my limited knowledge of constitutional law, Mr. Speaker, this matter has already been settled in the courts and say this proposed rule is constitutional, and I yield back the balance of my time. Thank you.
The chair recognizes the gentleman from California.
Mr. Speaker, at this time, I'm very happy to yield 1 minute to our good friend from Pennsylvania, Mr. English.
The chair recognizes the gentleman from Pennsylvania for 1 minute.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise sadly to oppose this unconscionable power grab in which the Democrats who claim they had changed have clearly indicated that they are back. They are up to the old tricks that they tried 12 years ago when they were thrown out of the majority. Here they are again, using the Constitution as a political handy wipe and extending full voting rights to favored rotten boroughs. Now, what's a rotten borough? During the 19th century in Britain, there were municipalities with tiny populations that were given full voting rights, and it took Britain years to get rid of that political inequity. Today, these people are talking about extending voting rights to territories that have a fraction of the population of a congressional district. One territory that has the population roughly of Butler County, Pennsylvania, one of my constituencies. One that has roughly the population of Mercer County, Pennsylvania. And to my good friend from Samoa, and he is a good friend, he represents a constituency with roughly the population of Mill Creek Township in Erie County, Pennsylvania, which I represent. And yet he'd be given full voting rights within the committee as a whole. That's an outrage. Democrats once stood for one man, one vote. Today on the floor of the House, they stand for one Samoan, 10 votes. Vote this down.
Gentleman from Massachusetts.
Mr. Speaker, this time I'd like to yield 1 minute to the distinguished gentleman from Maryland, our Democratic leader, Mr. Hoyer.
The gentleman from Maryland is recognized.
I don't know whether the gentleman who just spoke understands the pain that he inflicts, understands the lack of respect that he shows, understands the denial of democracy that he reflects. There's a gentleman, my friend, who sits behind you four aisles back, who represents...
Gentlemen, yield.
Not yet. Who represents seven times as many people as you and I represent. Seven times as many people. Who, if they move from the island of Puerto Rico to the state of Maryland, the state of Pennsylvania, have full voting rights. Because they're full United States. Not yet. Not yet, my friend. But he inflicts on the gentleman from America, Samoa, and those Samoans who have fought for this country and died and are serving today. Who have no vote. And for you on your side to represent that this is a power grab, in my opinion, is absolutely unconscionable, in your words, because it is so inaccurate. Why did the Court of Appeals rule this to be constitutional? Because it does not diminish any one of the 435 members in this body. Why? Because this is symbolism. This is symbolic. The delegates know it. The delegates know that this is not full voting rights for them or for the people they represent. But it is an opportunity for them to participate and to reference on the board, in the committee of the whole, their vote, their opinion. I'd be glad to yield to my friend.
Other chair.
That I do have the utmost respect for my good friend from Pennsylvania. And I'm really saddened this day to hear that the small population of the district that I represent doesn't mean anything to my distinguished colleague who had made this statement, alluding to the fact that there are not very many Samoans who live in this great nation of ours. I really am saddened by that notion, and I yield back to the gentleman.
Reclaiming my time.
Mr. Speaker, will the
gentleman
Ladies and gentlemen
of the House, what we are doing here is we are saying to five people, and I want to say, you saw the pain of the representative of the District of Columbia, who absolutely ought to have a full vote in this House. I hope that we will address that shortly, as she has
requested.
Will
the gentleman yield?
I will yield.
I thank my friend for yielding. And my friend and classmate, we came together in 1981. I came a little before he did because he came in a special election, Mr. Speaker. He knows that I have the highest regard for him. We've worked very closely in a bipartisan way on a number of issues. And one of the things I was most proud of over the past several years is that my friend carried in his breast pocket quotes of mine on things that I said when we were in the minority about the need for greater deliberation. We considered, as my friend knows, a very non-controversial issue, that being the extension of suspension days from Monday and Tuesday to Wednesday. We did that 3 years ago, a little over 3 years ago, and it had very little controversy to it. We began a very deliberative process. We had a hearing on that. I mean, again, there wasn't much controversy. And now I'm going to take this opportunity to extend the quote of my friend, if he'll indulge me, when he, on June 23rd of 2003, at our rules hearing on this, said, "The lack of free and fair debate on such important matters is an embarrassment to the members who are privileged to serve. It demeans the House, it cheats the American people, and it offends our democratic traditions. Unfortunately, tactics designed to shut down debate are not an aberration. They are becoming the norm." And, Mr. Speaker, all I would say to my friend is that the sort of unpleasant debate that we are witnessing right now underscores the fact that moving through the procedure that we have to the House floor without a single committee hearing, without the input of scholars who might talk about the impact on this institution, on the American people, on the rights of American citizens, is something that we should consider, and that's the concern that we have. And I believe what we should do is withdraw this measure from the floor and go through regular order. I simply offered, as the ranking minority member now of the committee, an amendment in the rule that would simply say that if I could offer, as a ranking member, the Committee of Jurisdiction a germane amendment, I would like to have a chance to do that, and I was voted down in that quest. Let's do proceed with what the gentleman has argued passionately for. He and I are both institutionalists, Mr. Speaker. Let's do allow the kind of deliberation that is essential to consideration of such an important issue. And I thank my friend for yielding. Will the gentleman yield?
Reclaiming my time. I yield to my friend.
No, I just want to clarify for the record, Mr. Speaker, that the Rules Committee did offer the Republicans a substitute, which they declined. The amendment that was brought before the Rules Committee was made in order. And I also would like to say, Mr. Speaker, in response to my friend Mr. English, that there are 58 million Americans who pay no income tax in this country, just payroll tax. I hope the gentleman is not suggesting that those people shouldn't have a right to vote.
Claiming my time, and we're running out of time. So I want to say that when I yielded, I was talking about symbolism. All of us believe that symbolism is very important. Our flag is a great symbol. Samoans have died for that flag. Residents of the District of Columbia have died for that flag. Residents of the Virgin Islands have died for that flag. Residents of Guam have died for that flag. And many, many residents of Puerto Rico have died for that flag. Yes, this is symbolic, which is why the court said it was appropriate, because it does not constitutionally diminish the vote of any one of the 435 of this member, this body, one iota. Why? Because if their votes make a difference, we automatically have a vote of the 435, five of us. That's why the court said this is absolutely constitutional. It is not enough what we do today, but it would be tragic if we do not do at least this basic step to recognize the inclusion of those who serve with us, who can speak with us, who can vote in committee across the street or in this building, but have not, but had the vote in the committee of the whole taken away from them when the Republicans took power in 1995. Let us restore that vote today. Vote for this rule, which is a fair rule. And I say to my friend who quoted my comments, you were accorded the right to a substitute. You chose not to take it. You were accorded the right to an amendment. You now want to withdraw that. I will tell you that on our side, if you want to withdraw that amendment by unanimous consent, we will not object. But my understanding is you don't want to make that request. We've given you that amendment. My time is up. The last time you asked me to yield, you gave a speech, and that's fine, but you're going to do it on your time. I yield back the balance of my time.
Is recognized.
Mr. Speaker, I yield myself such time as I may consume to simply say in response to my friend that we are clearly in a position where upstairs we had said that we did not believe we should amend a bad bill. But at the same time, I simply made the request for, as the ranking minority member, the right to have a germane amendment if we so chose, and that was, in fact, denied us on a party-line vote that we had in the House. And, Mr. Speaker, at this time, I'm very happy to yield a minute to my good friend from Allentown, Pennsylvania, Mr. Dent.
The chair recognizes the gentleman from Pennsylvania.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I, too, today rise in opposition to this rule and the underlying legislation. In this bill, the delegates and the resident commissioner will be allowed to vote on proceedings in the Committee of the Whole. But if their vote is decisive, then there must be a revote in the full House without the participation of these delegates. In other words, the bill says that your vote counts, except when it doesn't count. And when it really, really counts, that is, when it will make a difference in the outcome of the proceedings, it turns out that your vote doesn't count at all. This kind of absurdity might be appropriate in the drama of Beckett or UNESCO, but it has no place in the making of American law. And I do want to address an issue, too. In the last session, I supported the Tom Davis Holmes Norton bill to help deal with the issue of the District of Columbia's voting rights. And I agree with that. I support that legislation. And we should take up that legislation. We shouldn't do it through this rule. Also, with respect to self-determination in Puerto Rico, we've been supportive of Mr. Fortunio and his effort to allow for self-determination of the island, where people have a choice to make: independence, territorial status, or statehood. Let that process take its course. This is not the way to go. I oppose the rule and the underlying legislation. Thank you, Mr. Eubach.
Gentleman from Massachusetts is recognized by the chair.
Mr. Speaker, at this time I yield 1.5 minutes to the gentlewoman from Texas, Ms. Jackson Lee.
The gentlewoman from Texas is recognized by the chair.
Mr. Speaker, I ask to address the House and advise and extend my remarks.
No objection.
Might I say, Mr. Speaker, it is a joy to see you in the chair. And I thank the member of the Majority Rules Committee and the Rules Committee and a number of my colleagues. And might I just remind my colleagues that we had some 10 years for the members on the other side of the aisle to make good on a constitutional promise. It should be noted that this very rule and its format has been affirmed on constitutional grounds. It was utilized by majority vote in the 103rd Congress without one incident except 3 revotes. The idea and concept is to again inform America that we believe in one vote, one person. I know historically the complete insult to being considered less than one vote. Slaves were characterized historically as less than one person. And so this particular legislation is a making of a whole of individuals who pay taxes, federal taxes, Social Security, Medicare taxes, and individuals who we know, Mr. Speaker, have been on the front lines of Iraq, Afghanistan, and every single war. And so to the American Samoa, to the District of Columbia, to the Virgin Islands, and to the District of Columbia, along with Puerto Rico and the commissioner, may I have additional 30 seconds?
I yield the gentlewoman an additional 30 seconds.
The argument for self-rule or however Puerto Rico will ultimately decide is not the argument here today. The argument here today is to allow the constituents, some 4.4 million represented by commissioners and delegates, to have the constitutional right to vote. There is no way that this Congress, this Democratic Congress, under the leadership of Speaker Pelosi and the leadership team, can reject the right for Americans to vote or those who are, in many instances, citizens. And so, Mr. Speaker, I support the rule and the underlying bill and would ask us to uphold the Constitution by voting today to allow those who have the right to vote to express their vote. I yield back.
Chair recognizes the gentleman from California, Mr. Dreyer.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'm very pleased to yield 2 minutes to a former member of the Rules Committee. We miss him greatly upstairs, our good friend from Marietta, Georgia, Dr. Gingrey.
The gentleman from Georgia is recognized.
Mr. Speaker, thank you, and I thank my former chairman on the Rules Committee for the time. And I rise in opposition to this rule and the underlying resolution with some degree of sadness, because I certainly have great, great respect for the representatives of the territories and the District of Columbia. They're sitting here on the floor and speaking, and they are great members. But I have to oppose this because I think that, indeed, Mr. Speaker, it will be ruled unconstitutional in the final analysis. And I know that the Democratic majority in the first 2 weeks and the 100 hours with the 6-for-6 legislative agenda, the bumper sticker issues that were poll tested, if you took an issue like this and you said to the American people, we are about to grant voting rights to the members from the territories that do not pay federal income taxes, and these votes can raise your taxes, and they don't pay federal income taxes. I think that the poll on that would be at least 90% in opposition. So if you're going to do things on a poll-driven agenda, you would not be doing this. I think that it may end up being a moot point, Mr. Speaker, because voting in the committee of the whole, given the members that right, it may never occur. It may be a moot point because with these closed rules in no regular order, there may never be any votes in the committee of the whole. So I regretfully rise to oppose this. I think it's absolutely wrong, but I have great respect for my colleagues from the territories and the District of Columbia, and I yield back.
The chair recognizes the gentleman from Massachusetts.
Mr. Speaker, I want to ask unanimous consent to have inserted in the record a letter that was sent to the Rules Committee, signed by Mr. Felimo Vega, Mr. Fortuno, Ms. Eleanor Holmes Norton, Ms. Christensen, and Ms. Bordiaio, in support of the underlying bill. And let me remind my colleague from Georgia, this is not a closed rule. If he wants a closed rule, he has the right to amend it, and I will reserve my time.
Reserving the right to object?
The gentleman from Georgia.
Preserving the right to object, I just wanted to appreciate the gentleman for placing items in the record. I would point out that the majority leader has stated that the Republicans have described this as a power grab. In fact, the New York Times, the Chicago Tribune, the Washington Post, and the USA
Speaker,
Today described this as a power grab, and I withdraw my reservation.
What is the gentleman's objection?
The gentleman reserves the right to object. Will the gentleman withdraw his reservation?
I've already done so.
I reserve my time.
Without objection, it will now be placed in the record.
Mr. Speaker, may I inquire of the chair how much time is remaining on both sides?
The gentleman from California has 11 and one-half minutes.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Mr. Speaker. I didn't hear you. Could you repeat
that? You have 11 and one half minutes.
11 and a half minutes. And on the other side?
The gentleman from Massachusetts has three.
I will. 3 minutes?
Yes.
Oh, my
I will
gosh.
Let the gentleman proceed.
Thank you. I had no idea we had so much more time. Well, at this point, I'm very, very pleased to yield 3 minutes to the distinguished resident commissioner from Puerto Rico, our good friend, Mr. Fortunio.
The gentleman from Puerto Rico is recognized by the chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I ask unanimous consent to extend and revise my remarks.
Without objection.
Mr. Speaker, as the only Republican afforded a vote by House Resolution 78, I rise to thank my distinguished colleague from Maryland, Majority Leader Hoyer, for introducing this resolution granting the five representatives of the non-state areas of our nation voting representation in the Committee of the Whole, but perhaps even more importantly, for opening up the discussion of the status of the U.S. possessions and territories. That's what's going on here today. I also rise to urge my colleagues who can exercise their right to vote on this amendment to the rules to give the representatives in the House from the District of Columbia, Virgin Islands, American Samoa, Guam, and Puerto Rico the only meaningful representation we can provide our constituents in the House of Representatives. However, I do this with some reluctance since I share some legal concerns as well as fervor because this proposed representation will be so limited. A vote on amendments to bills in the Committee of the Whole with every revote in the event that our votes become decisive. What the House really needs to do for the almost 4 million U.S. citizens that I represent before the Senate, the executive branch, as well as this House, is to authorize a process of self-determination for Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico has been a U.S. territory since 1898, and we still remain disenfranchised. Puerto Rican Americans have been citizens since 1917, and we have served with distinction and honor in our armed forces and have defended our nation in every battlefield around the world. Actually, as we speak, we've lost 54 of my constituents so far in the Gulf War on Terrorism. What my constituents really deserve is the opportunity to seek equal representation and equal responsibilities in the federal system, or alternatively, the freedom of a sovereign nation, even though the latter option has very limited support among my constituents. I am pleased that 110 of my colleagues in the last Congress agreed, including leaders on both sides of the aisle, such as the distinguished majority leader, Mr. Hoyer, to co-sponsor the Puerto Rico Democracy Act. I'm also heartened that the chairman of the Committee of Jurisdiction, the gentleman from West Virginia, Mr. Rahal, and the ranking minority member, the gentleman from Alaska, Mr. Don Young, have indicated that legislation for this purpose is a priority this year. The question now, however, is whether to give all the territories of the District of Columbia as much representation for our constituents that my four non-state colleagues and I can constitutionally provide, a vote in the Committee of the Whole that will not be decisive on amendments. Together, the five of us represent 4.9 million U.S. citizens, Americans who fight and die for the United States every single day. I respectfully request that they deserve this representation, limited as it may be, until our status situation is fully addressed, as I hope it will be fully addressed in the near future. Thank you again, and I yield back the balance of my time.
Chair recognizes the gentleman from California.
Mr. Speaker, I'd inquire of the gentleman from Massachusetts how many speakers he has remaining.
I'm it.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Speaker, then I'll yield myself the balance of the time. Mr. Speaker, this has been a very, very sad debate. It's been a sad debate because of the lack of deliberation and the lack of consideration. The issue before us is at best controversial. I listened to the remarks of my very good friend who, as I just told her, spends more time representing me now that we have this five-day work week than I do myself as a Californian because we spend so much time in the District of Columbia. Her remarks go right to the point of concern that we have raised about this process and why we are where we are at this juncture. As I look at the other delegates, and we've just heard from the resident commissioner, we obviously have the utmost respect for them, their service, and the great representation that they provide. And over and above that, the issue that everyone has mentioned since the focal point of the State of the Union address delivered here by the President last night is that as we prosecute this global war on terror, it is essential that we respect and revere every single life that has been lost in that struggle. And we know that there are many people who have come from the District of Columbia and from the other territories who have paid the ultimate price, and we are in debt to them for that. But, Mr. Speaker, the thing that's very troubling to me is that we are at this point without having ever given any kind of committee hearing, without any discussion or debate, and with a process upstairs that I think my colleagues on the other side of the aisle will acknowledge was really a great travesty and an injustice. I want to express my appreciation to Mr. McGovern. Mr. Speaker, Mr. McGovern, when we were considering this rule upstairs, did make a good faith effort in trying to offer a proposed compromise to this rule. And unfortunately, he was denied the chance to do that. As we look at the issue before us, many of us are troubled about the constitutionality of this. And our friends have basically just, on the other side of the aisle, discussed the court decision on this issue, Mr. Speaker, by saying what was stated by the circuit court. They used the word meaningless to describe this vote, and it was through, as I said, legerdemain, legislative sleight of hand, that they were able to, at this juncture, move through those two courts as they did with this measure. But, Mr. Speaker, my plea to my very good friends and colleagues in the majority is simply let us go through the process of deliberation. Let us go through committee hearings. Let us hear from those very thoughtful scholars who so often testified before the Rules Committee in the past on a wide range of issues that we consider. And then, after we go through that deliberative process, this process of democracy which we all hold near and dear, then I believe we could have a proposal that we could bring to the floor, if possible, to consider this measure. But, Mr. Speaker, as I said, I'm very, very, very disappointed at the way this whole issue has been handled. And frankly, as my friend from Marietta said earlier, all of the closed rules that we've had on these measures that were brought before us, we were told that when we got beyond the 6406, that things were going to be much different. Professor at my alma mater, Claremont McKenna College, wrote in the Orange County Register yesterday that that's like saying, I'll respect you in the morning. Mr. Speaker, we have seen a continuation of a clampdown of deliberative democracy, and what we're faced with here at this moment, offer of a substitute aside, has denied the deliberation that this very important issue deserves. And so, Mr. Speaker, I urge my colleagues to oppose this rule, and if by chance the rule does pass, I urge strong opposition to the underlying resolution. And with that, I yield back the balance of my time.
The gentleman from Massachusetts is recognized.
Sir, did the gentleman yield back the balance of his time?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, let me restate what I said earlier. This rule allows for the consideration of the only amendment offered in the Rules Committee yesterday. We also offered the minority the opportunity for a substitute, which they declined. If this bill is so awful, they could have introduced a substitute to null and void it. Indeed, the amendment that is made in order practically null and voids this entire bill. As someone who's been around for a few years, I don't think I've ever heard so many complaints about a rule that makes in order every single amendment offered in the Rules Committee. But, Mr. Speaker, let me say that the old days are over. Now, I could stand on this floor all day and recite a list of abuses by the former majority. Instead, let me focus on how this Democratic majority has chosen to operate. For the last few weeks, we have heard complaint after complaint that the Republicans were not allowed to offer amendments on our 6 for 06 agenda. Now the gentleman from California and others are complaining that we are allowing a Republican amendment. I've got a case of whiplash, Mr. Speaker. I'm afraid that by allowing the other side of the aisle to offer amendments and offer a substitute, we have messed up their talking points. Now, Mr. Kirk from Illinois came before the Rules Committee with a thoughtful amendment offered in good faith. Now, I happen to disagree very strongly with the substance of his amendment, but I support his right to offer it, debate it, and get an up or down vote in this House. Indeed, I would urge my colleagues to go to the Rules Committee and to read the testimony of Mr. Kirk and also the statements by members of the Rules Committee, Republican members, who urged that this amendment be made in order. This was a hearing, I would remind my colleagues, that happened in the light of day, not in the middle of the night. Let me also remind my colleagues that there is no, I will not. There is no obligation for the gentleman for Illinois or anyone else to offer the amendment if they choose not to. It's up to them. Indeed, they can offer an amendment to strike this amendment from the rule if they want, and have a closed rule, which they're become accustomed to, under their leadership. What we're allowing, Mr. Speaker, is for the delegates and the resident commissioner to the House of Representatives to have a symbolic vote that will not count if they are the deciding margin of victory or defeat of any amendment. We're allowing for the possible consideration of an amendment. If the sponsor member decides to offer the amendment to this resolution, he can offer it or his designee. Finally, we're protecting that amendment from all points of order. Now, let me close, Mr. Speaker, by addressing the rank-and-file members on the Republican side. We believe that you have a right to be heard. If you come before the Rules Committee with thoughtful amendments, we will give you every possible consideration. We will not be perfect. We will do some things that you won't like. But the distinguished chairwoman of the Rules Committee, Ms. Slaughter, and all of us on this side of the aisle have made it very clear that we will preside over a more open democratic process than was the norm for the past 12 years. The rule before us is a product of that commitment, and indeed it responds to the member who came before the Rules Committee to offer an amendment. I think that is good form. Mr. Speaker, I would urge my colleagues to vote yes on the previous question, vote yes on the rule. And with that, Mr. Speaker, I yield back the balance of my time, and I move the previous question.
The question is on ordering the previous question. The chair recognizes the gentleman from California. Well, all those in favor, say aye. All those opposed, no.
Mr. Speaker, I object to the vote on the grounds the quorum is not present. Make a point of order, quorum is not present.
The ayes have it.
Gentleman, Speaker, I object to the vote of quorum is not present. Make a point of order, quorum is not present.
Evidently, a quorum is not present. The yeas and the nays are ordered. Members will record their votes by electronic device. Pursuant to Clause 9 of Rule 20, the chair will reduce to 5 minutes the minimum time for electronic voting if ordered on the question of adoption of the resolution.
The House has wrapped up debate, an hour of debate on the rule for a change in the way the House votes in a rule on the five delegates in the House, an expansion of voting rights in the House. This is a change in rules, H.R. 78, which would allow delegates partial voting rights on amendments under debate on the House floor. It wouldn't permit voting on final passage of bills. Currently, delegates can vote only in committees. This would apply to the delegates from the District of Columbia, Guam, the Virgin Islands, American Samoa, and the resident commissioner from Puerto Rico. This is a 15-minute vote, a previous question vote. If this passes, they will move on to a vote on the rule itself. Now, the rule provides for an hour of general debate on bill and 20 minutes on an amendment if offered. Representative Kirk of Illinois, it is likely that he will offer an amendment that would change the bill a bit. It would provide for a delegate or resident commissioner to be eligible to vote, would have to certify for each session of Congress that the residents in those areas be subject to federal income, estate, and excise taxes in the same manner or to the same extent that the residents of the states are. So this first vote, a 15-minute vote here on the House floor. The Senate is in session today as well. More debate over there on work on a bill that increases the minimum wage. This is H.R. 2 that was passed in the House last week. It increases the minimum wage to $7.25 an hour. A vote underway in the Senate now on an amendment by Republican Judd Gregg. They might have a vote today, too, to limit debate on the bill itself at some point today. You can follow Senate coverage on C-SPAN 2. And also on Capitol Hill today, the first markup session in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. They're meeting to mark up or make changes to the Iraq resolution as offered by Senator Biden and Senator Hagel the other day. That's on C-SPAN 3 now. You'll have a chance to see that also later in our programming schedule on the C-SPAN networks. And beyond that, you have a chance to read the Biden resolution and all of the other resolutions and related documents and video on our website. We have a new featured link in our featured link section that goes directly back to that, as well as to the some votes from 2002 on the original Iraq resolution. So a recommendation here to take a look at that section of our website to see some past historical context on the Iraq debate that's going on Capitol Hill and across the country, as well as video. Again, we're in a 15-minute vote here on the House floor. You're watching live coverage of the U.S. House on C-SPAN. If you're just joining us, the work of the House today has been on rules changes, a rules change that would allow delegates partial voting rights on amendments under debate under the House floor. First vote of the day, this is a procedural vote, previous question vote. Here's how one of the Capitol Hill publications is looking at today's debate. CQ writer Susan Ferriccio reports that look for some sour debate on the House floor Wednesday when Democrats try to restore partial voting rights to the delegates from the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, and Island Territories. We're going to resist them, promised House Minority Leader, House Minority Whip Roy Blunt of Missouri. The article continues, Republicans have philosophical objections, but they're also miffed about the timing. The House is expected to finish its work by 1 p.m. because of a planned GOP retreat, and day after coverage of President Bush's State of the Union address will probably dominate the news cycle. Adam Putnam of Florida, quoted in the article, says, it was clearly designed and timed to elicit as little public attention as possible. And finally, the article says Republicans can take heart, though, in the prospect of getting a second chance to make their case House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer of Maryland says he anticipates the chamber will take up a measure in short term that would afford full voting rights to the District of Columbia. That from CQ. This is a 15-minute vote, this first vote, 15 minutes. If it passes, they'll move on to a vote on the rule for the change in the House rules, and that will allow for an hour of general debate and 20 minutes on a possible amendment. You're watching live coverage of the U.S. House, where last night President Bush gave his State of the Union address before a joint session of Congress. And by the way, you can see the president's address and reaction from members and others on our website, cspan.org. And on our Capital News website, capitalnews.org, you can participate in our poll of the day. The question is, who should set the nation's agenda, the president or Congress? Log on and cast your vote and get the latest on what's going on Capitol Hill and other political news and video at capitalnews.org. This is the first recorded vote of the day in the U.S. House, and this is a procedural vote, 15 minutes here. Later on, likely more debate on the change in House rules, which would allow delegates partial voting rights on amendments on the House floor. It wouldn't permit voting on final passage of bills. Currently, delegates can only vote in the committee, and these delegates we're talking about are from the District of Columbia, Guam, the Virgin Islands, American Samoa, and the resident commissioner from the island of Puerto Rico.